couple days ago that showed even as far back as two or so weeks ago, there was a White House staffer that tested positive. And we want to reiterate that we really do protect individuals' privacy. And so this is all publicly available information. And that often means that we may need to name someone as White House staffer or journalist one or journalist two, journalist three. But we really want to get as accurate and as timely of a data set as possible without sacrificing privacy or accuracy.
And if people want to get this information, where can they go? We have 5 seconds.
So they can go to whcovidtracker.com, and there's a tip line there that we encourage anybody to submit tips or even results if they are contacts.
Well, with all the controversies going around college education right now, Benji, I can see that your time is well spent. Benji Renton, senior at Middlebury College in Vermont, one of the creators of the White House COVID-19 Outbreak Tracker website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
There, friends and neighbors. My name is Zeke, and I got some things to say about all the foo-for-all that's been going on in these United States over the last few years. And I told Bob Madar, I'm taking over Local Folks Podcast this month because I'm a bit head up, and I got a lot to talk about. You can find Local Folks at KBOO.FM. Go to Programs, Podcasts, and click on Local Folks. I'll talk with you soon, partners.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01. It's Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy. Stay tuned.
What's happening right at this very moment? Welcome to Too Much Information. My name is Abe Proctor. I'm joined with by Tracy Simmons this morning. Tracy, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Good morning, listeners.
This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your dial on the internet at kboo.fm. I'm grateful that you joined us this morning because, as it happens, there's a few things worth noting that have transpired in the United States over the past week. Let's just go straight to the elephant in the room, shall we, Tracy? Trump got the COVID. He got the COVID.
He got the Rona. What is this?
Yeah, this is all at once both tragic, ironic, and incredibly predictable that this man's reckless behavior would eventually expose him to this virus.
I would also say absolutely preventable.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely preventable. But, you know, if you don't try to prevent anything, then, you know, that's what happens.
Yes. Well, absolutely preventable, much like the tens of thousands of cases that Trump's policies have enabled in this country. So there's a lot that we don't yet know about this situation, but the timeline roughly works like this. Late last week, or about the middle of last week, we learned that Hope Hicks, one of the president's close advisors, had tested positive to the coronavirus. And in rapid succession, we learned that many of the people around him in his inner circle, including his wife, Melania, had also tested positive for COVID-19. And the super spreader event associated with this cluster, because we now have to call it a COVID-19 hotspot, don't we? The People's Mansion. The White House is a COVID-19 hotspot. The super spreader event tied to most of these cases seems to be the event held in celebration of the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court on the previous weekend at the White House, in which we have footage of many people whom we now know to be COVID-19 positive mingling without masks, speaking close up, face to face, in intimate conversations with people. And we know now that at least three U.S. senators have contracted the virus as a direct result of having attended that event. So this is Trump's irresponsible and reckless behavior in a nutshell right here.
Yeah. I mean, I've not been without words for a long time, but I just didn't even know what to say except, oh my goodness. And then to, you know, be in the hospital, receive, you know, this super cocktail of medicine. Some which we know wouldn't be given to a patient who wasn't showing signs of COVID pneumonia, and then to see him emerge from the hospital 72 hours later and tell everyone else not to be afraid of COVID, don't worry, you know, we have the best medicines, when at the same time the whole nomination of Amy Coney Barrett is about stripping the ACA down to nothing. Right, so taking away people's health care at the same time you're telling people that don't be worried. Meanwhile, there are 210,000 Americans who are no longer with us, and their families have absolutely experienced the toll of those excess deaths. And so, you know, just the callousness of this person's behavior. Literally, we have a super spreader in chief. And at this point, for anyone that's still planning to vote for Trump, I have nothing but questions for you. What are you thinking? What, like, this person does not care about any of us and our health. And so at some point, we have to have that existential conversation of where do we think this, you know, nation is going to go with continued failure of leadership at this level. I mean, it's beyond fathom. Like, I just don't have the words, really.
Hello, Tracy. I'm a Trump voter here. I'm absolutely going to vote for the president. He whooped that Rona's butt. He got it. He was out of the hospital in 2 days. You see that? Saluting that helicopter as he bravely gasped for breath like a freshly landed trout. Of course I'm going to vote for that man. Yeah, you're right. It's sort of beggar's belief here. Just the combination of the selfishness, the recklessness, the absolute disregard for the consequences of his actions on others. It is indeed his whole presidency boiled down into a microcosm. And when you think about the permutations of it, it just gets worse, right? He went for that little parade-like drive-by a couple of days ago in front of Walter Reed Hospital in an SUV, a closed SUV, driven by and staffed by a number of masked Secret Service agents who presumably were ordered by their commander-in-chief to get into a sealed vehicle with an active COVID-19 patient so that he could have a drive-by in front of a handful of fans outside of the hospital. Now, news reports have suggested that this was, as ridiculous as it was, a compromise, that the president had been demanding to go home. His doctors refused to send him home, and this was the compromise that they arrived at, that he would do this little COVID-19 hotbox slow-motion drive-by in front of his fans. Now, as Tracy and I were talking about before the program, I think this represents a basic imbalance in the power dynamic. When you're at a military hospital and the physicians and attending healthcare professionals are enlisted people or officers in the United States military, and when your commander-in-chief says, send me home, you're not listening to simply an unruly patient, you're listening to your commander-in-chief, so you pretty much have to send him home, which is what they did just a couple of days ago. Now, if you watch the video there is a pretty slickly edited video that was put out by the Trump campaign, not the White House, the Trump campaign, which has a nicely framed shot of Marine One, the helicopter, approaching the White House and touching down on the lawn. And then you see President Trump disembarking and walking confidently across the lawn and up the steps to something I just learned is called the Truman Balcony. That's a new little nugget of information. And he turns around and he salutes the departing helicopter, and then he whips off his mask. And his hair, I would say his hair stirred in the breeze, but his hair doesn't stir in the breeze. So he stood there clearly laboring for breath, clearly struggling just to keep it together at the top of those stairs. So this begs the question, why? Why would he do this? What, do you have any ideas on that?
I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, this person has shown us in every way possible that he is a narcissist and really experiences the world in his own mind with his own superpowers leading him and guiding him. And he wants to also demonstrate that to the rest of us, right? This perception of strength, this perception of you know, really, you know, infallibility and you know, just immortality and kind of all
virility
that,
yeah.
Right, yeah, that a strong man really wants to portray. And of course, you know, this edited video was about really marking that down and sharing that with the supporters to say, yes, this is, you know, a man of good stock, of good genes, as he says oftentimes. And he beat the virus, right? However, we know the course of this virus. When we look at people like Herman Cain, who succumbed to the virus, after a whole month, right, that the virus course is not that you know, show up one day and you feel a little better. It's oftentimes you feel a little better and then you take a real big slide. You might come back to feeling better and take a bigger slide. And so it's a long course of the virus. And what's really interesting is the only thing that's going to kill more Americans this year is heart disease and stroke, right? And so it's like, so heart attacks, right, and stroke. Right? Like, this is a very serious virus. To portray it in this irresponsible way as something that you can beat, something that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid of, just go ahead and spread it around so we can get, you know, herd immunity, which is just ridiculous, the whole idea. Is just absolutely irresponsible from this level of leadership. I will also note that his doctor, who has come out and probably loves the, you know, kind of traction he's getting with these medical, you know, press conferences, is an osteopath. He's not a neurologist. He's not a pathophysiologist. He is not an infectious disease doctor. He is a bone doctor, and he is trained in osteopathy. So we just have to continue asking the question, what is this? This is farce at this point. Like, what? It would be funny if it wasn't so sad because, you know, I just recently heard from a really good friend that a friend of ours, of course, our friends like a group is very small right now because of COVID-19, and I haven't seen this person, but a really good friend just tested positive for COVID from a person who came to his house, didn't know that they were infected, and now he's ill. And so, you know, it hits home for the many people who have connections to people who have been ill, who have been sacrificing so much, staying home, working from home, doing everything they can, homeschooling, really putting their lives in a bubble to stay safe, and to have this person so flippantly tell you, it's nothing to worry about, don't be worried, don't let the fear, you know, take hold of your life, and it just is kind of a slap in the face.
Indeed. Well, I mean, you too can beat the coronavirus if you have a luxurious suite at the nation's best military hospital and a whole army of doctors rushing to your side and an expensive experimental cocktail of drugs and treatments. You too can turn around and prematurely leave the hospital and return to your home. Now, the White House is not just the president's home. We need to remember this. It is a workplace that employs hundreds of people, and he was shown on camera removing his mask and walking into that workplace. You hear me sighing because it's just, it's a monstrous thing to do. It is a monstrous thing to do.
the people who work in there too are not going to be medevac to Walter Reed, right? They're regular people. When we think about the wait staff, the butlers, the chefs, many, you know, are people who, you know, that is their job. They have to keep going to work. They don't have a choice to not work. Because of their social status and their financial situation, they are not going to get the same level of care. And so he continues to put other people in harm's way. And so it's just unconscionable. It doesn't make sense. And I think when I talk to people about what a critical point we are in this United States experiment, that there is a potential for this person to be reelected, although the polls don't show us that, but they didn't show us that in 2016 either. I will say that. That we have to think, would you want this person as your boss? I would say absolutely not. Nobody with any good sense would you know, want to be put in harm's way on a regular basis by another person who they are beholden to, who they answer to. And so we have to start framing things in the conversation with others around logic, strategic questioning, like, you know, why would you want this to continue? If you were the leader of the free world, what would you do? And get people to really start thinking critically about the choices they have. We saw Joe Biden masked up yesterday in Miami talking to people. And, you know, it's just such a difference of humanity in this person that you see care deeply, really want to bring forward a mask mandate for the United States, really want to speak to and acknowledge the excess deaths that we have seen and the pain and the suffering for so many. And then we see the absolute contrast opposite in the current president. And it's stark, and it, to me, it doesn't make any sense that this person is still polling 40%.
It's the racism. It's the racism, Tracy. The New York Times this morning reporting, this is according to some unnamed sources within the Trump campaign, that there were those within his campaign who saw his infection with COVID-19 as an opportunity to make him appear sympathetic to the public, an opportunity for him to show empathy towards the people who are suffering from COVID-19 and the families of those who have lost people to COVID-19, an opportunity to sort of hit the reset and recast the president in a more compassionate and empathetic light as the election draws nearer. But apparently the candidate himself was unable to stick to that script. He had to get out of the hospital. He had to do that slow motion drive-by. He had to leave early and return to the White House early. And he had to do that stage managed moment on the Truman balcony where he whips off his mask. And now this morning is tweeting again about how COVID-19 is, you know, not as bad as the flu, talking about the 100,000 people we're going to lose to the flu this flu season. But you can't let COVID-19 rule your life. You can't live in fear of it. He's back to the worst of the denials that he espoused in the early days of the pandemic. In other words, what may yet be a brush with death for the president of the United States has not been enough for him to come to Jesus, with regard to the coronavirus. I don't know if there's anything that can get this man to act in a manner commensurate with his responsibilities as a leader of a rich and populous nation. He has not an ounce of empathy, not an ounce of compassion. All he cares about is himself. All he cares about is preserving his office so that he can avoid the twin perils of the judicial system and his creditor. That's all he cares about.
Absolutely. And I will say, you know, empathy and narcissism are mutually exclusive, right? They don't mix well. And so we are just seeing this on display. You know, I felt like, you know, when I heard about this and he and I shared, or, you know, that they were both infected, I was thinking, you know, this is someone he loved deeply. You know, this is his wife. You know, maybe this will be, you know, the moment for me. And I grew up in a space where I loved the whole Dickens, A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. And thinking about, you know, the script, you know, just kind of this moment and it's cathartic, and they wake up the next day and they're just different, they're changed. And I just remember that was all fiction, right? Like wishful thinking, not going to happen. And I also thought forward to like what we're seeing now. Like this person, if they become really, really sick, they're going to lie about it the whole time. And if they beat this virus, that's going to be the narrative, right? And they're going to share and spread more disinformation and so more distrust. There's also active work happening right now to block the CDC from having more stringent controls over the vaccine production. And so we know that there is a complete rush to get something to market and into the veins of Americans as far as a vaccine for COVID-19, which should frighten everyone. I am absolutely not an anti-vaxxer. I believe in vaccines, but I also believe in science and feel that there should be, scientific trials and a scientific process to make sure that the vaccine, whenever it is ready, is safe and effective and doesn't cause more harm to the American people. And so, you know, we're dealing with something that historically has no parallel, right? We don't have a parallel to this person. There is a long history, however, of, you know, the White House shielding the public from the truth around the status health-wise of the president. But even in, you know, say we'll talk about FDR and polio, there wasn't an active interest in the president to deny the challenges by any of these diseases that they had. You know, Woodrow Wilson had a stroke. His wife kind of covered it up. And really, it's, you know, in those times, it was really about the public interest and national security, right? You don't want a weakened president to...
Right. Reagan had dementia. You
know, exactly. There's a history of you know, kind of lying about the president's health, but there isn't a history of the president lying about the actual illness and causing more harm in spreading this kind of disinformation. And so we're kind of left to pick up the pieces and figure it out on our own, and it's quite unfortunate.
It is. I loved your Christmas Carol analogy, but there's no moment of truth for Ebenezer Trump, is there? He gets up on Christmas morning and calls Tiny Tim a loser. There's no seat in the life for this guy. But you're right. I mean, in fairness, we must point out that there's a long history in the United States of presidents concealing the extent of their ailments. But you're right. It's never become quite this pressing, and we've never been treated to quite this sort of theater of the absurd that we've seen in the last few days. So I want to remind people you're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. I'm joined by Tracy Simmons. We are taking your calls. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also send us a tweet at HonestAbe72. Next week, we will have a dedicated Twitter account tied to the show, so we'll be able to take your input that way. Let's go to the phones. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to take up arms to protect my freedom to go without a mask. Got to protect my freedoms and my liberties, you know. So people need to take up arms and defend themselves, you know. Ha, ha, ha. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right. A little sarcasm, a little irony to get us going from the listener. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So a lot depends now on how the next couple of weeks unfold. Will the president get sicker? Will he recover? How will the public respond to his repeated and renewed claims that really there's nothing to see here with the COVID? Move along. It's no big deal. The flu is worse. Besides, here comes the flu, so be very afraid of that. We're really at a time of incredible uncertainty, and the president's illness has only compounded a situation that was already incredibly uncertain. So these next few weeks are going to be interesting.
I will just say, you know, and I'm not a physician, I'll give that disclaimer, but get your flu shots. The last thing you want is the flu and COVID-19 at the same time. I feel like because we don't have a responsible president and leadership at the highest levels, we're going to have to take care of ourselves. And so that's my message to you all listeners. If you can, please get your flu shots, because this flu season is going to be a nasty one as we all start to gather indoors and it becomes rainy and cold, especially here in the Great Pacific Northwest. The likelihood that the currently spiking COVID-19 cases will be exacerbated by the flu. So take care of yourself, for sure. I think what we had to glaze over because of the orange elephant in Walter Reed, we didn't talk about the debate at all. And you can already, look at some of the polling, but it looks like Biden got a pretty good pickup off of that. I watched that terrible spectacle with my whole family, and of course my 13-year-old daughter was like, "What is going on?" It was traumatic. It was absolutely traumatic. So what's your take on the debate, Abe?
Well, what's my take on the debate? Well, it was presidential debates. The more of them I see, as the older I get, the more I think they're inconsequential. They tend not to move the needle too terribly much in terms of who people are going to vote for. But in this particular case, I can't recall any time I've seen a performance quite that unhinged. The president got redder and redder, as if he were a lobster gradually steaming. Over the course of the debate, his answers got wilder and wilder. He got more and more angry. He, in his closing statement, called into question the integrity of the upcoming election, set the stage for, as we've talked about on this program, the delegitimizing of the results on election night. He again refused to say he would concede defeat if, in fact, Joe Biden is the winner. It was incredibly disturbing for anybody who has a vested interest in the peaceful transition of power after the election. Now, before you all call me up to tell me how naive I am, let's just concede that, yes, the peaceful transfer of power in this country over the centuries has often masked the continuity of an ongoing imperialist machine. I'm going to go ahead and concede that point and say that, well, at the least, we have an orderly transition of power between stewards of that imperialist machine. So that's all I'll say about that. Why don't we go to the phones and see what our listeners have to say, and then we can touch again on the debate and on Trump's illness and on another factor I think that comes into play here. So let's go to Harry. Good morning.
Oh, greetings, everyone, and thank you for taking my call. Yes, I watched the debate. I could only watch maybe 10 minutes of it because right there, live on TV, Trump was having a psychological breakdown. Even according to the moderator, what was his name, Wallace, interrupted him and Biden over 100 times. I mean, he just was just unhinged. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Now that we find out he did have the virus, shouldn't Wallace and Biden self-quarantine? And because, I mean, this is bad. I mean, I don't know what else to say about this.
Tracy, you want to take a stab at that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we don't know when Trump's last negative test was because it's something that the White House won't disclose. So we don't know when he, was formally diagnosed or tested positive. So we don't know. I think right now, Biden can't afford to be off the campaign trail. And because he has a much better team around him with regard to mask wearing as a regular practice, with regard to, social distancing as a regular practice, he might be okay. I think in any other time, he probably would go self-quarantine. We know that, there were people in the audience from the Trump team who were infected at the time in that audience without masks. It's very scary for anyone who would have been in that audience. And, of course, you think about all the droplets that were coming out of Trump's mouth as he was, you know, screaming and heaving and
so many droplets,
you know, just being apoplectic, right? Like, so we know that there is definite risk for Joe Biden. And I think because of the severity of the situation that we're in, he has taken a calculated risk to continue on the campaign trail. I saw just a couple of days ago his beautiful wife, Jill, pull him back from the ledge with a whole bunch of reporters that were way closer than 6 feet. And she delicately tugged on his sweater and pulled him back. And so, you know, I saw that as an act of love, but also an act of care for her husband. So I'm hoping that everyone else stays safe. He has been testing negative since that the report came out that Hope Hicks was tested positive. And he's been testing daily. To your point about just being able to watch it for 10 minutes, I mean, it was painful. I literally had to watch it. But I felt like an abused child by the end of that, you know, 1 hour time. You know, just the yelling. And what's interesting is a report came out saying that Chris Christie, as one of his debate preppers, had told him, you know, hey, you know, Joe Biden speaks with a stammer. He has a stutter or speech impediment. You know, the way you can rattle someone with a speech impediment is to continue interrupting them and throw them off of their train of thought. And so that was not only Trump just being Trump as just a not very nice person, but also using a weakness that Joe Biden has been very public about and very candid and vulnerable about as a tactic for winning the debate. Of course, it did not go Trump's way. He was seen as unhinged. He was not following the rules of the debate, which his campaign had agreed to. And literally, you know, I was saying to people I know, like, just shut off his microphone. Like, at some point, like, none of us are winning because we're not hearing ideas. This is not a debate about ideas. It's a debate about who can, you know, be the bigger bully. And, of course, you know, I think the tactic worked. We saw Joe Biden say a couple things that, you know, were quote-unquote unpresidential, but I'd have done way worse. I mean, he didn't, yeah. He didn't drop any, you know, F-bombs or anything like that. So I would just say, you know, he did a really good job of keeping composure given this, you know, behemoth, you know, screaming down his neck. And, of course, with aerosolized COVID probably in those droplets.
So with us, Harry. Okay. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Yeah, Tracy, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that we don't know the date of Trump's last negative test. That was the other factor I was alluding to before we took Harry's call. We don't know. That's the one piece of information that Trump's team has not been willing to divulge, that his White House position in those cartoonish press conferences has been unwilling to divulge. They don't want to tell us, because I think the answer to that question establishes an incredibly damning timeline for the president. In all likelihood, he was infected before that debate. We know that the Trump entourage arrived late to the debate site in Cleveland. They missed the scheduled pre-debate round of COVID-19 tests and did not take the test. As you mentioned, and as Harry mentioned, the Trump entourage refused to wear their masks inside the facility while the debate was going on. We even had Joe Biden's young granddaughter tweeting, "What's with all these Trumps and their refusal to wear masks?" I mean, it was comical if we weren't looking at the incredibly tragic outcome. That event, the debate itself, is quite likely a large-scale spreading event, as is the event for Amy Coney Barrett on the lawn of the White House. The reckless and irresponsible behavior of this man and his family, it's really hard to quantify. It's really hard to get one's brain around. I can't imagine behaving in such a way, because I know, A, my mother would kick my butt, and secondly, that's just not how you behave towards other human beings. And in a codependent, interlocked, interdependent society, you just don't do things like that, because the consequences are too dire. And this is yet another example of how this man is unable to grasp that he cannot simply do whatever it is that he wants to do. The problem here, of course, is that all of his life, he has essentially been able to do whatever it is he wants to do and has not been forced to face any lingering or severe consequences for any of it. I can't point to any other American, Tracy, who has at three different points in their life had and lost $500 million. It's just beggar's belief.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the phones. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys if, given this guy's, given his track record for distraction and deflection, and given how desperate that administration wanted to be or must have been to get the debate and the white supremacist deal thing off the news cycle, is there any credible chatter out there? I don't do social media or anything, that this guy even had the disease in the first place and it's just a big ruse?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, and thank you very much for the call. Yeah, we really don't know. There's been a lot of speculation out there as to whether or not this was all theater. Did Trump really have the disease? Did he come up with the crazy idea that he would feign being sick with COVID-19 so that he could stage the sort of Phoenix rising from the ashes bit of theater that we saw unfold over the last couple of days? I think that he's actually sick. There are too many factors that point to him actually being sick that I think we can accept that as being true. And among that evidence is the evidence of our own eyes. We all saw him straining to breathe at the top of those steps. We know from what little concrete information we've received from his physician and from the physicians at Walter Reed is that he received a number of treatments that are only indicated for at least moderate cases of COVID-19, if not severe cases of COVID-19. He's got it. Trump's got the COVID. I think we can all agree on that as a common marking post of reality right now. And there aren't too many of those these days.
Yeah, and I agree, though, that anything that he says is suspect at this point, right? There's so much distrust in the space that, yeah, it creates an opportunity for people to question, is this even real and true? However, when we go back to that deep narcissism that's there, a narcissist is not going to willingly tell you that they're sick, because then they can't project that strength that really they derive their sense of self from. And so I can't imagine that Trump would divulge he was sick with COVID-19 if that were not true, just based on that, you know, deep and undying narcissism that he lived by.
Right. But that having been said, I think now that he is infected with COVID-19, he absolutely seized upon that rising from the ashes narrative. And he absolutely wants to portray that, you know, the ailing Superman who cannot be overcome, who is here saluting the helicopter and waving to the people, the grateful people of his nation. He's absolutely seized on that narrative. But I think this time it's a bridge too far. This is a man who has made his career, most especially his career as a celebrity and then later as a politician, on displays of dominance. It's how he operates, right? This played out in stark relief during the primary campaign in 2016 when he was belittling Little Marco and Sleepy Jeb and everybody else, Low Energy Jeb or whatever it's he called them, Lion Ted. This is what he does. He puts on dominance displays and he waits for people to wilt around him. But now it just looks weak. Now it looks desperate. Now it looks pathetic. We've got an overweight, sick old man trying to fool everybody to thinking he's strong. And my take is that it's not going to work, that people have had enough. The country is absolutely at its wit's end and is not going to accept this little bit of theater.
Yeah. I hear in the polls that he is losing ground with elder folks. So 65 and older are turning away in droves. And it makes sense, right? If you're not seeing your family for the last 6-7 months, that you would think, oh, this person is just not at all caring about me and my situation, not at all caring about the American people, especially elder people who are more likely to be severely incapacitated, if not die, of this COVID-19. And just think about the people within Trump's circle. Chris Christie is in the hospital currently. Mm-hmm. Another quite overweight man who gave him that terrible advice within the debate prepping. But they were all in very close contact, for days prepping for that debate. And so you have to wonder, when we think about the age makeup of most of Congress, and we have three of our senators, who have been tested positive, right? Mm-hmm. They're all in that age range where it is not something that you just get over. It has real life consequences. And so we've got to take this seriously. We've got to, take the opportunity to really take stock of what is happening in our country with the disinformation, with the spread of this illness that is all absolutely preventable. What can we do to prevent it? Well, we can wear a mask, we can stay home, we can socially distance when necessary and appropriate, and really try and band together to move through this next month. I think it's gonna be really drinking from a fire hose of terrible news for the next 30 days or so. But we'll get through it. But we absolutely need to lean into that, what you said, like the interdependence of our society. We depend on each other to be safe collectively. Let's do that.
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think we should all conduct ourselves in the manner you just described, which is to say safely. And in that, I would say, don't go to any Supreme Court parties at the White House. That seems to be a bad choice. Now, I brought that up. Yes, it was low-hanging fruit. It was a cheap laugh, yes. But I bring that up because you mentioned the three U.S. senators who are now sick, most likely as a direct result of having attended that thing. Mm-hmm. We also have video footage of the nominee herself talking face-to-face with people whom we know to be infected with COVID-19. So mm-hmm. We don't know her status right now, but she was most certainly exposed. Whether or not she's sick, we don't know. But I think you could make a credible argument if you were a Democratic senator, that it's not safe right now to go forward with confirmation hearings because of all these senators who are sick, and also because the Senate Majority Leader has not implemented a systemic testing regimen for members of the Senate. So, not to appear crass and opportunistic, but if I were a Democratic senator, I would be saying, as Elizabeth Warren and others are, that it's not safe to do this right now, and we need to postpone these hearings. That might be a silver lining.
I don't think it's going to happen because Trump can't steal the election if he doesn't have the support of a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. I really think it's part of the larger fix that is trying to be perpetuated and mm-hmm. Happen. So I think it's going to unfortunately move forward. I've heard people, Tom Tillis and Rob Johnson, I don't know, say, I'm going to do it in a bubble if I have to. I'm going to be voting on this thing because they have to see this go through. And it's just a really troubling time to see so many Republicans really show such a lack of respect for the institution that they are supposed to serve.
I'm picturing all these senators inside these giant hamster balls bumping into each other in the Capitol as they're trying to confirm a Supreme Court nominee. Oh, boy. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've got another caller standing by. Let's go to that call. And then we haven't even talked about the Proud Boys yet. I can't believe it. So let's go to Art. Art, good morning.
Good morning, then. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I've been thinking about how a certain sect of people who are going to vote for the guy could have their minds changed if they thought of him as a money changer in the temple. From the biblical story, one thing that made Jesus mad was Trump is definitely in it for the money. So he's a hypocrite in that sense, and people believe, that somehow the abortion will be overruled in the Supreme Court. And the only thing I can say about that for me is it's not a man's choice to say. I say that that's a woman's choice to determine and whether that fits a, you know, it's a good argument or not. I just say they Christians should know that he's a money changer in their temple. What do you think?
That's true.
It's a that's a good way to go to a Christian who's going to vote for him and say, is he really a money changer in the temple? Yes, he is. He's in it for the money.
Just that. It's interesting that you bring up that passage too, because that was Jesus's only act of violent revolution, like storming into that temple and throwing the money changers out.
Yeah, that's right. It's what's going on, is the way I see it. One way to look at how it, another way to get rid of him. Okay, you guys.
Hey, thanks very much for the call, Art.
Appreciate
it. Yeah. So also in that that ridiculous apoplectic debate performance, Donald Trump gave a shout out to a white supremacist gang. Stand by, Proud Boys, he said.
Yeah. And they immediately changed their logo. They changed, yes. You know, and so, yes, I mean, we knew this, though. I mean, I'm not at all surprised or excited. He wouldn't condemn white supremacists writ large. He asked for a name of a group and then pretended in the aftermath of all of that that he didn't even know who they were. Yet he has pictures with some of the highest levels of leadership of that group, because it is a real group, not like Antifa or BLM. It is a real group with a charter and a website and a logo. What was interesting about, you know, I think that was the one point in the debate where Trump looked sheepish. He looked, you know, like he was just not able to do that. And he knows why. It's because those are his supporters. Mm-hmm. They love him because of the racism. And we've said this before. We said this earlier today, that they were energized. I mean, if you saw any of their social media posts, they were like, yes, he told us to stand by. And, you know, and of course, if you're thinking about war metaphors and what happens in war, stand by is a call to wait until I tell you to act,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't a dog whistle. It was a bullhorn, yes, to this group, and to probably all other groups that are similar, Patriot Prayer, you know, KKK factions throughout the country, that he is, you know, their rallying cry is to stand by. I will tell you when to jump into action. And we've heard, you know, ripples, you know, rumors of, you know, potential violence that might happen after the election, depending on which way it goes. And, you know, if you are a thinking, feeling person, it's pretty scary to imagine the press encouraging that behavior.
Oh yeah, it's chilling. It's chilling to me. And we spent a lot of time in this program laughing at the absurdity of all this, and I think we're going to continue to do that, because it's one of the few ways
we have to cope
with all this, right? We have to. But this is deadly serious. In all honesty, one of the things that frightens me the most about the rising polarization and the tensions between the opposing sides in this country is that at some point we're going to begin to see, and I would say we've already passed this point, we are going to see violence between politically opposing factions of Americans, that we are going to start turning on each other. And we've seen that on a small scale in connection with the ongoing Black Lives Matter protests and the fascists that have shown up in opposition. Sometimes the other way around. Sometimes it's the anti-fascists showing up to oppose the fascists. But we've begun to see this violence between Americans. And when the President of the United States makes a statement like that, stand by. Now, you said stand by means, you know, be ready to act. Yes, it does mean that. But more than that, it means be absolutely prepared. Be ready to act at the drop of a hat. At my word, it is time to mobilize. I mean, that stand by has a very specific military connotation. And it was frightening. And I, as you said, the Proud Boys adopted it into their logo. They started celebrating that. They just love the fact that the President of the United States gave them a shout out. If you think this is just Trump being Trump and Trump making noise, I assure you it is not. And even the most cursory glance at the history of racial violence in this country will tell you that this is the farthest thing from a joke. But
well,
thankfully,
there's also the news of you know, him encouraging poll watching and sending out tweets to encourage encourage poll watching, which is, you know, just a glossed over way of voter suppression, right? Intimidating voters, making them think that if they show up to the polls, there's going to be somebody there that's a potential threat to their health and safety, so they won't go vote, right? We see the voter suppression and also trying to invalidate, you know, vote by mail and other opportunities for people to vote without being fully present in person. And so it's all part of this, you know, larger effort to influence our election in a negative way towards Trump and scare people away from the polls and away from doing their civic duties. And this is, of course, the president is the one leading this effort. It's frightening. It's frightening.
It absolutely is. But thankfully, once again, the people of the United States owe a debt of gratitude to the gay community for this reason. Now, the Proud Boys were long ago kicked off of Twitter for repeated incitements to violence and hateful and racist and bigoted language. So they've been booted off Twitter. And so their main social media platform of choice is this this right-wing outfit called Parler. So because there's no Proud Boys on Twitter, the gay community stepped up in a big way on Twitter and reclaimed the hashtag Proud Boys. So if you hop onto Twitter and you search for the hashtag Proud Boys, you will see picture after glorious picture of men embracing and kissing and displaying their love for one another and reclaiming the word Proud Boys. It is beautiful. And apparently the Proud Boys are really, really angry about it. So
I can well only done. Imagine their toxic masculinity does not allow them to embrace these images. But I was tickled. I mean, just tickled.
It was the perfect response. The perfect response. Let's go to the phone. Brian, you're next.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. You know, so many things swirling in my mind these days. It's hard to control, but hopefully I can keep it together to ask you, say a couple things and then ask you a question. Listening to the radio, I'm in the middle of a big project, so I get to listen to the radio, and I was listening to the OPB channel yesterday, and they had a number of stories that interviewed people on the street, I believe in Kansas and possibly Arkansas, and just the you know, it's hard to know how to go with this division in the country because it's so profound. It's not obvious anymore who's going to side or who's going to be strongly pro one side or the other. They interviewed a couple on the street, and the husband identified himself as Native American, and he was very pro Trump. You know, it came down to the economy, which is still. But anyway, and then there was another. Some people, maybe it was I'm trying to remember that town now. I just blanked. That had the uprising and the young man shot two protesters. But anyway, I think it was on that in that town. They interviewed some black store owners that have a new painting that's been made very prominent in front of their house, and they for Black Lives Matter, and they were of mixed mind about it because it did chase off some customers, and so they were kind of on the fence about what they supported, and because of the economy, because of their business, and I understand that, but it still, it seems like it's come down to, I was thinking about it the other day, maybe there does need to be, we need to divide into two countries, you know, the ones where economy is top importance, and then another country where people or the environment is most important. Maybe you just need to simplify this. But anyway, the thing that I wanted to ask is, could you possibly do a show about how we can get our brains around interacting with people that are so gullible that they'll buy this stuff? Because it's always in the past been that you respect the other side's opinion and you work from a point of, you know, commonality, and that's disappearing in my mind, and I just don't know what to do with it. And then the last thing is, I want to shout out to Joe. Thank you for all your years of service, and I really miss you already, but good luck to you.
Hey, well, thanks. That was very nice. I will pass that on to Joe. Appreciate that. So, and thank you for the call. So you're asking, can we do a show about how do we reach that irreducible 35% who seem to be ride or die for Trump? I don't know. I don't think you can reach that irreducible 35%. That's why I'm using the adjective irreducible. I suppose we could dedicate a show or a portion of the show to, rhetorical tactics and ways you can, talk to your racist uncle at Thanksgiving. But in terms of, I just don't know. I don't know if it's worth mustering the effort because, it's the racism, as we keep saying. I mean, the people, that 35% who's always going to vote for Trump, they are, and I'm generalizing here, I realize that, forgive me, they are rooted in certain ideas of the United States, of nationalism, of what patriotism means, of what freedom means, all of which, in my opinion, get each of those terms wrong. But I don't know that there's any reaching them. I don't think that is a block of the electorate worth going after, because they are what they are, they will support what they will support, and if, at this point, if you're willing to still cast a vote for a man who openly incites violence from white nationalist militia, there's not a whole lot more I can say to you.
I agree, and I also think there are strategies for coming to a common ground with people who think very differently than you. I am not sold on casting people aside permanently. I do think we have to defund Fox News. I think that would be a first step really dismantling the disinformation that so many of Trump supporters are consuming on a daily basis. The fear mongering of the disinformation of a news source that really isn't news, it's entertainment. And so there has to be an effort to really limit the influence that Fox News has on this group of people, because I think we can all kind of assume that many of these people consume one kind of news from one source, and it is not fair or balanced. Secondly, I don't know a lot of people who think, extremely different from me. I do have people who are in private business, who really do think about the economy, who think about the stock market as part of the economy and a driver of the economy, when I'm, always saying that's not the case. And so I think for me, a fact-based conversation with a person who has a very deeply and different mindset about how the world works is important. I use, historical facts. I use facts of the day, statistics, to have some of these conversations. And I try and, as much as possible, focus on the common humanity, right? Like, we're both humans in the world, and focus on the future. I think if we can focus on the future, because many of these people are not focused on the future, they're focused on the here and now. And if we can shift our focus away from what's happening right now to what we want our world to be like, there's an opportunity to bridge that gap.
Well, that was very well said, and far more optimistic than what I had to say. All right, we are drawing near to the end here. Francis, good morning.
Hi. When the president went up those stairs and took off his mask, I saw a very ill person. He's still sick, and it was alarming to see how far a man will go to just put on a show. I think it is also disheartening at how the discussion of him is as if he's a king, like he's the king of the United States. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of people enabling him, including the Senate majority and their leader, and their silence is probably the most alarming to me. On a positive note, I just saw excerpts of a video that was released by Michelle Obama today, and it's about an hour, and they're calling it the final argument, and it's in support of Joe Biden, but she speaks to all the things you've been talking about today, but she does it in a way that addresses everyone in this country. She also speaks about racism on a very personal level, and it's beautiful. She's a very amazing person. But on a final note, which is not a happy one, I would like people to Google the name Ronald Greene, G-R-E-E-N-E. And this is a man who was beaten to death, literally, by Louisiana state troopers last year. And news and videos are just now coming out about it. And there's forest fires still going on in California, and our focus is on this man who wants to be king, and there's a whole lot of things that we need to be addressing. You guys take care.
You too. Thank you, Francis.
Thanks, Harold.
Yeah, and thank you for sort of bringing us down to earth there at the end. That was, I think, a pretty stark reminder of what exactly is at stake here. Now, I know many of you realize that Joe Biden is an imperfect messenger for progressives at this time. I think we can all agree on that. But I think the body of evidence that we've seen over the last nearly 4 years now should be enough, even for the most ardent progressive, to realize that it's imperative that we have a change in leadership at the highest level in this country. I don't think you can make any other conclusion than that.
And to address some of the things that, you know, Francis was talking about with regard to our climate. We know that Trump is not going to do, and no one in the administration that Trump currently has is going to do anything about the climate. They're still in denial about the climate, just like they're in denial about COVID. We know that Trump's not going to do anything about the excess violence and death of people at the hands of police, specifically black people. And so we need a change in leadership, and we talk about Trump because he is at this current moment the head of the snake.
Mm-hmm. He is. Well, I think we better leave it there. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Too Much Information this morning. Tracy, thank you once again for a great show. Thanks to all our callers. And remember, we need your support here at KBOO. Log on to KBOO.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices for Justice and Radical Healing. From Tuesday,